seven decades of great music. Z103.com and the TCB Game AM Oldies program. Hunting the Music Man, Severns, and here he is, Mark Wickersham with Basics.
Hey.
Economic Development. Hey, how are you?
Good. I'm a little bit heavier than I was last week.
Heavier?
This is the Friday after Easter when all those family celebrations and you feast and that kind of thing and lay around and don't get enough exercise. So I've gained a little weight.
Uh-oh.
Everything's safe. Don't tell a doctor, but no big deal.
I asked the doctor, what should I do to lose weight? What should I eat to lose weight? He said, nothing fatty. And then I didn't know what he really meant. He said, no, don't eat anything fatty.
Yeah. Oh, mercy. Well, so speaking of eating, we may want to have some antacids before this particular show.
Uh-oh, what we got?
Want to spend our time together today talking about the historic property tax reform that has just made its way through the Indiana General Assembly and that was signed recently into law by Governor Mike Braun.
All right.
As you may know, and the listening audience may know, the process politically made for a really exciting debate in the Indiana General Assembly this session, as you might expect, and lots of people were fairly emotional on every side of the debate. At the end, I'm not exactly sure I know who really enjoyed and liked the process or the results, but as you run through the key list of players in the whole discussion, there's obviously the governor and his position. He's the one that asked the General Assembly to work on the program. The lieutenant governor, who wasn't always on the same page with the governor in that process because he didn't think things were going far enough on the conservative side. The legislature itself was in the middle of this. Obviously, they were the focal point. The local units of government made their positions known pretty aggressively. The school corporations were involved, the business community, and residential property owners. Now, as you run through that list, the governor had a lot on his plate that he can refer to as a win. He didn't quite get everything that he wanted, but as it goes with the political process, you sometimes have to take the good with the bad, and you get what you can in the process. But he also had a lot of political capital and goodwill on the line at risk in order to get this done. In fact, taking a chance on, frankly, becoming a lame duck in April of his first year in office, depending on how things worked out. At least as far as the legislators and the local elected officials might have been concerned. And I think that's interesting, I'll digress for a second, the Allen County Republican Party recently had their annual dinner, and according to the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, who probably wasn't one of their best friends in the event for the Republicans, but according to the newspaper, the governor, as the keynote speaker at the event, didn't discuss the property tax bill at all, and I found that really interesting. And when you look at what the lieutenant governor and his situation was, the lieutenant governor publicly called for the governor to veto the bill, and had the quote in public that, hey, here's his quote, nobody, including myself, knows what this bill says, and as a result, we owe it to the public to veto it. Well, the governor signed it anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. The legislators, well, they got yelled at by just about everyone. I cannot imagine how difficult it was for the legislators, who really weren't the ones that started this discussion, to have, everybody was upset with them from every perspective. The property tax, property owners, the residential property owners had an organization that came to the Capitol building and protested the legislators' actions, and the governor and lieutenant governor both made efforts to speak with that particular group in the legislative state house. So it was just an interesting dynamic. Local units of government did a lot of lobbying and put a lot of pressure on the General Assembly. In fact, at the local level, Indiana State Senator Andy Zay voted against the bill. And was one of just a few Republicans that did. But local units of government are going to have a real struggle on their hand to figure out how to work with the new law But at the end of the discussion, they did seem to be a little bit more comfortable with the fact that it probably won't be as bad as some of the original discussions were. School corporations, on the other hand, will seriously struggle with the new law. One estimate predicted that the Huntington County Community School Corporation would lose $947,000 as a result of the changes in the bill, with no real clear path to figure out how to make up for the loss. One of the things that that the General Assembly insisted on that is consistent with the public here in Huntington County, you might recall a few years ago when there was a referenda on the ballot to allow the Huntington County Community School Corporation to issue bonds to build a new high school. That referendum was defeated, but it was also on the ballot in an off-year municipal election cycle. So the General Assembly changed the law that referenda ballot initiatives have to be on the general election ballot. They can't be on either a primary ballot or on a municipal election cycle. They have to be on the general election process. Well, that will probably make it more difficult for school corporations around the state to come up with new funding streams. But again, depending on your perspective, that may or may not be a bad thing. But the truth is, it's going to make it more transparent and more public for the school corporations. And I think, to a large part, it will change how the school corporations that hire consultants for marketing purposes, those consulting groups are going to have a different approach to helping school corporations, I think. It's a bit of minutia in the weeds, but I think it's one result of that change. Small businesses will probably benefit the most, frankly, as the threshold for being taxed on business personal property was raised and changed significantly. And what it means is, like, the increases in the acquisition cost threshold for business personal property went from, like, if you bought something that was $80,000, that was the threshold that it was subject to property taxation. If you were under $80,000, it wasn't, okay? Well, now that's been raised to $2 million.
Whoa.
So there's a noticeable difference in that for small businesses.
Absolutely.
That will really benefit small businesses in the process. Also, the 30% depreciation floor will no longer apply to anything purchased after January 1st of this year and phases out the liability on existing equipment. I'm not sure if you're not in business, you would understand what that actually means. But let's say Monty Seaburns Incorporated is buying a piece of equipment that's going to cost $500,000 to manufacture widgets. Okay. Well, when the longer you own that piece of equipment, you're depreciating its value, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so, under previous law, you were not allowed to depreciate that to zero as it relates to property taxation. When it got to 30% of value, that's where it stayed from then on. It didn't phase out. So even though it was potentially depreciated completely off of your books, you were still taxed for business personal property purposes. Well, that's changed for, I think, the better. So I think that makes sense that you're now allowed to track that as you would normally depreciate it.
That's awesome. It really is, because, and you're right, it does benefit small businesses, because sometimes it's really hard to get your feet on the ground in those first years.
Right. It also is one of the biggest losses if you're on the municipal side or the school corporation side. So there's a trade-off on every one of these decisions, but it does help. Hopefully, it will help the economy organically grow, if you will, to extend more opportunities on the tax base for the municipalities just by having more investment and growth opportunities taking place. That's yet to be seen, but that's the hope. residential property owners, who at one point were the reason this entire thing was started, based on the governor's campaign promises, won a little bit, but probably not nearly what they had hoped for and were expecting. There is, at this point, a new credit for homesteads, a 10% credit up to a maximum of $300, meaning that 10% of your AV, up to $300,000 in essence, would receive a new credit. But the issue is that the assessed valuations are still going up, and they're going up well beyond the rate of inflation. And that's a concern. There are reports already in Huntington County of property owners receiving their assessed value statements from the county for the coming year, for 25, pay 26, as we say.
Mm-hmm.
And there are reports of property owners' AVs going up as much as 20%. In 1 year, which was kind of the argument that was being made. I mean, one of the concerns overall was that with your homestead, the truth is, in essence, the government is taxing unrealized capital gains. You don't really have a value change until you sell the home. Otherwise, it's all on paper. They tax you incrementally on that gain throughout the time that you live and own the property. So there, at some point, we hope that this isn't the end of the discussion, that there'll be some additional research and proposals.
Oh, man. It leads you to wonder, are there other ways? Now, you say the school corporation, for example, and that's a biggie, you know, because a lot of people are concerned about it in general. But it's losing that kind of money. Are there ways that it can make it up? For example, we talked about Steel Dynamics and coming into Whitley and being able to do a lot of things, including funding the building of the, was it a junior high up there or a school building?
School.
Yeah, high school.
Campus.
Yeah.
It was a campus. For
wow.
Several buildings. Well, there's some possibility in that regard, but the transitional period is going to be difficult here because and I'm going to put my municipal hat on for a second.
Okay? All right, do it. I like okay. That's a good-looking hat, by the way.
thanks a lot. Okay. If you're looking at this from the perspective of the elected officials locally, one of the things that you could do, depending on the impact of the property tax changes, you could raise local income tax rates. Okay, well, the General Assembly figured that out, and this is one of the arguments. So the General Assembly capped the total local income tax rate to 2.9%, and that's actually down from 3.75%.
Wowzers.
So it limits the likelihood that municipalities would simply raise income taxes or that the school would try to do an income tax levy in order to make up for lost property taxes. And yet, at the end of the day, most units of government are still going to spend more next year than they did this past year. And that's the thing I honestly don't know. First of all, if that $947,000 number about the school, at the end of the day, is that the reality or was that a projected number? Secondly, was that a number off of a potential growth in spending or was that a cut on the baseline? And what we're finding, at least in some cases at this point, according to a group called Hoosiers for Opportunity, Prosperity, and Enterprise, or HOPE, their group president, Ryan Black, said local units of government are going to need to adjust to things like maybe a 3% increase in expenditures as opposed to the 10%, 7%, and 7% that they've had the last 3 years. So is it a genuine reduction in costs and revenue, or is it slowing the growth? And it appears at this point that it's an effort to slow the growth, because at the Huntington County Council meeting on April 21st, the county council was asked by the budget planning committee and department heads, you know, it's like, well, how do we put together, can you give us any kind of guidance for how we put together our budget proposals for this coming year? I mean, are we talking about 5% increase? Are we talking, what are we talking about? And rather than getting counsel that says, you know, keep it flatlined, they were advised to use 2.3% growth as their basis. So I think there's still a lot to learn, and we don't really know yet, but the tendency is to continue to have slower growth, but to still have growth in spending at the local level. Now, the Indiana State Budget Agency, on the other hand, as they're working now in the final days of the General Assembly this year to actually get a budget, a biennial budget, they're projecting at this point a loss of over $2 billion in revenue for the next year. So, in fact, in reality, they're looking at things even like clawing back, as they say, appropriations that were previously approved for the IEDC and their projects and other things as a start. So even that 2.3% that the county council used as just preliminary guidance may not end up being the reality. So we'll see. The trend also is that, you know, residential taxation of homesteads are still in flux. We think the real win here overall is for the governor to be able to make the announcement, which he did, that, you know, there was a historic measure cutting property taxes for Hoosier property owners by the tune of about $1.2 billion. And that is true. It's not really clear how it's all going to work out. But it's going to force some changes, that's for sure. And in my case at HQ'd, mm-hmm. kind of getting to the point of the basics of economic development, right? Well, there's no doubt that we're going to have some adjustments to make in how local incentives either are used or exist. I mean, we've talked about that on previous shows about the local income tax program and how grants can be issued. You know, we call it seeded grants. There are tax abatement discussions that we've talked about on previous shows. I'm expecting both to frankly be affected by the effort. I mentioned the business, the changes in property taxation for businesses, and I think in many respects what the General Assembly's done is already pass a tax abatement for small businesses. So that system that we've been accustomed to at the local level is likely to change.
Yes, and I know we've talked about this a lot, but I think it's important to repeat it, that the risk of being redundant, because people think an abatement means that someone just gets out of paying taxes and how unfair it is, but that's not the case at all. It's just more of an extension, isn't it?
It's phasing in their liability.
Yes. So eventually, I mean, they're going to pay the piper, but it gives them time to get land on their feet to do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I still think that overall, kind of the conservative fiscal person in me, it would be like really nice if the effective tax rates were low enough to the point where you didn't need to even have that discussion. And I think that's part of what the legislature was starting in their debate this session.
I see. How do you feel about that? I mean, I know we're too political, of course, but is it a scary thing for you, or do you see some upside? Probably pros and cons, but more pros, more cons. What do you think?
Well, it's pretty early at this point. On the pro side, I'm as hard as this discussion and debate was for the General Assembly and the governor and local units of government, I think at the end of the day, it's positive when all of those groups get together and have a genuinely serious evaluation of tax and spending policies. Even if they don't come to the conclusion that the populace would like, it's always healthy, I think, when they just have a Donnybrook, if you will, which was pretty close to that this session, to really get an understanding of, okay, every time we propose an expense as a unit of government, somebody has to pay for it. And what does it really mean? And how do we get there? I think that was probably really positive. On the negative side, the whole discussion got out of kilter in the sense of trying to just get things done. And there were a lot of arguments that were probably creating longer-term political issues that politicians are going to have to work with for several years now. For the residential property owners, I think it helped a little bit at the end of the day, but as assessed values continue to increase, I'm not sure that this resulted in a win that was particularly meaningful. It just kind of depends. So I'm mixed in my reaction, and I try to do that honestly without a political bias. Had I been asked by the governor, which I wasn't, and I don't know why I would, but if the governor would have asked my opinion prior to all of this starting, I would have said, you're on to something in the sense that Indiana's property tax system, while still among the most affordable in the nation, it has a lot of room for improvement. And I would recommend going very cautiously with that unless you really don't care about your political future.
I mean, that definitely.
And if you don't, you know, if you're about doing the right thing and you don't care whether you get reelected or you don't want to run for some other office some other time, then you just dig in and you do the right thing. And I don't know how much of that was in play versus some other explanation. I don't know, but I would have suggested being, you know, you've got a 4-year term as governor. Why do you think you need that in the first 4 months? I don't understand that, but I applaud the effort to get it started. I don't think it's finished. I think they will do more in the coming sessions. I think they're going to have some technical corrections they're going to have to figure out and that kind of thing, because they, you know, it's not like the local levels of units of government throughout the state aren't going to try to figure out how to be creative to pay the bills. I mean, it's going to continue. So I in the Mark Twain world, we need to still, as taxpayers, keep an eye on this.
Yes. Do our due diligence and kind of research where these things are going as well, as much as you can, of course. But, you know, and it seems like now with all the information available to us at our fingertips via the internet and so on, it makes it a little easier to read up and kind of get yourself in the know.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, I think I said Mark Twain. I think Will Rogers had some pretty interesting quotes about that type of stuff, too.
Yes, he said, on one of his records, the only aggravation about busting one of my records is you have to sweep up the pieces afterwards.
There you go.
He was a very wise man.
Yeah.
But, so a lot of tax... Okay, so continuing on.
No, that's what I've got for today's show, unless you have other questions.
Well, I know these bills are complex, and I can see why people get emotional, because it does seem that they're full of pages of, basically rigmarole, you know, and a lot of gobbledygook, you know, and before you get down to the real thing. And do you think that's what was upsetting some of the folks that were in this?
Well, I just being realistic, it isn't as easy as we think to just say, okay, if you're the governor, I want a 20% cut in residential property taxes. Okay, it's going to take some time. Even if everybody at the General Assembly agreed with that, right?
True.
You still have to figure out how to write the legal language to execute that, and there are so many unintended consequences, and so it's so dynamic. It's not a one-dimensional thing. It's a multi-dimensional thing. And the only way I can explain it easily is like it's a bowl of Jell-O that hasn't fully solidified, right? You take a spoonful out of one area and then it just spreads. And so to actually get it right in and of itself takes effort. So
sure, got to give it time to set up and get solid.
Yep,
that's a good way of putting it. I never thought of using that comparison, but hey, I like to eat, so I get the jello.
There you go.
Well, again, thank you for another great show. We'll be looking forward to seeing you back here next week, sir.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's get back into the oldies.